For the record, this is a meeting of the Consolidated Commission on Utilities. It's a block hour authority work session. For the record, those present are myself, Commissioner Sanchez, Commissioner Santos, and Commissioner Guthards. We have a quorum. John, start.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, I'd like to bring up Resolution 2020-01. This is the third time that we brought it before the commission, and GPA management is ready to make a decision, to make a recommendation on this. And again, this is to require that the net metering solar system, wind turbine system, have frequency control capability or energy storage system in order to be tied into the island power grid. As we have shown in past illustrations, which I will show in a few minutes, Exhibit A illustrates that the intermittency of solar PV production and highlights that energy storage systems is necessary to provide smooth energy into the customer's premises and the power grid. Mm-hmm. Whereas we do have a 25 megawatt solar farm in Denver, and there is an estimated close to 24 megawatt of net metering capacity now tied into the grid. And with all energy frequency control, it would result in significant intermittency, degrading again the system reliability. And whereas as I've shown, the number of automatic under frequency load shedding events have increased substantially over the past few years due to intermittency. And in 2019, GPA customers experienced 27 feeder or outages due to solar PV systems when they immediately dropped due to cloud cover, causing the or under frequency systems to kick in order to avoid the system blackout. And whereas the customers paying for the system grid are non-net metering customers, because the new battery system that we're going to be installing is all really paid in under debt. And as we all know, NEM gets full credit for whatever they produce and use, actually, due to the solar intermittency. And whereas even in the $1 million integration study that we had conducted, it's a joint study by GPA and the U.S. Navy, it also observed from the PV added, that all PV added with and after phase two renewable projects require ESS support during transient events, in addition to other things really necessary to keep the system operating reliably. And again, whereas we cannot, GPA cannot continue to add intermittent energy production into the grid without requiring all future owned solar PV and wind turbine system to have frequency control capability or energy storage system. We recommend that all new NEM customers must have frequency control capability or energy storage system beginning June 1st, 2020. Furthermore, it was also from all the discussions, from the outreach and discussions here in the commission, we all understand that GPA really can provide economies of scale in putting in batteries, and therefore it will be substantially cheaper if GPA did provide it for all customers. But the main thing is to require that all solar PV systems have a battery component to it, whether to themselves or to GPA. And so therefore we calculated what it costs for the energy storage system that we are putting on the line very shortly, which would improve the reliability of the system, but again, it will degrade if we don't do anything. Mm-hmm. And based on what we calculated on 50-50 share, because as you can see, there's a 50-50 component here in terms of what we're doing with Talafofo and what we're doing with the rest of the system. Mm-hmm. Calculated out to about $2.43 per kilowatt, and that is the installed kilowatt capacity. That we know at the time of the application, at the time of the installation, So there we can, it's administratively very easy to calculate and bill for. And that's set at $2.43 per kilowatt. So for example, about a nine kilowatt system is 9 times, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, I'm not as fast today 21. With my 2.43 times 9 kilowatt system. That's $21.87 a month. Mm-hmm. They will pay for battery.
John, you've now, had this in before. This is very interesting. I like this. They're giving them a choice.
Well, we talked about it at the work session. I ended up, I was at 220, he was at 230, and he's done the calculation better, and it's 240.
And then
it's reasonable.
Right. And so again, then there was also discussions about should we have all the net metering customers pay this fee per month. Well, right now they're not paying for any. All of this, the fee of the new ESS is really in the debt component of the base rate. Mm-hmm. So therefore, we could ask the DUC to begin charging or requiring that all begin, you know, therefore they're not required to put in their batteries anymore because we are putting it in. Just that now at least there's parity across at least for the new battery that's being installed. So again, it's not clear. I didn't make it clear. I always said new customer, which is kind of what I mentioned also at the public hearing. Mm-hmm. I was looking myself at new customer, but some of the customers themselves mentioned in the outreach that they don't mind paying a little bit for, you know, so and so. And a little bit for so and so is about 21.
Are you proposing the grandfather existing, or this would be a new rate charge? Yeah. Is your proposal to charge existing customers also, or just new customers?
I'd say this, my proposal was really the new customers.
Okay, so you would grandfather everybody else, because that's, as you said, at the hearing.
And I'm hoping, well, there's two ways to see it, right? There's one, we can ask them to begin to charge everybody, right? But two, we have a petition before them to request that that net metering customers pay their fair share of the system. Mm-hmm. And their fair share of the system really, at minimum, is really not debatable. It's the depth in the system, the T&D grid and all of that. So the depth in the system includes now the battery that we are putting in. Shortly.
So, existing customers, we have a petition for a rate, and this second proposal is for a new customer. Right?
Yeah, this is to ensure that all new customers have it. No,
but and what happens to the old customer? What are we proposing there?
Let me just clarify. Yeah. I think what John is saying, is there's currently a petition to go in and to get avoided costs from all M customers.
Existing.
that's the one. The second one.
So that's how we're dealing with existing, and then this would apply to new.
This would only apply on the energy storage portion. There's a different thing here. In other words, John, correct me if I'm wrong. I think you're referring to the fact that you're applying for an avoided cost on everybody, right?
That's right. That's on the net system. And in that avoided cost, in that application, they would have to pay for the debt. That's not an avoided cost, no? Yeah. The debt. So therefore, in that debt component is already the battery.
Raise the fixed fee? Is that how we would implement the change?
No. If they were only to get credit at avoided cost,
instead of one for one, we'd lower.
Now, if that's not really going to happen, or, you know, and I hate to believe that that's going to be the case, because that's a runaway train, then at least on the this component, the battery component that we're putting in, because remember the batteries were being put in the beginning really for the benefit of all the customers, because we were having whenever you lose the generator, there's an under frequency trip. Now, because there's more solar PV in the system, which impacts the system more, the same battery is not going to do exactly what we have proposed. It may be a little less, no? So therefore, there is an impact again to them. So all I'm saying is that at least for new customers, they pay this price,
$243,
which is the will be used in the system, no? Right? And then, if nothing else happens on the other,
at least you get the $243.
At least you get the $243, and everyone, those that have solar PV today, don't have to worry about adding in a battery or us requiring them to add in a battery.
But if the PUC changes the one-for-one NEM reimbursement, that would apply to all customers.
That's right.
So a new customer could end up would have a choice of either putting their own in and avoid and either going off the grid if they want,
right.
Or if they stay on the grid, they would still pay. They would have to pay the $243, but they'd be reimbursed at the different NEM if our petition is granted.
That's right, but they will be reimbursed. And, yeah, that's correct.
But if they put in their own battery, we don't charge the $243. Right?
However, they will still have to pay the $245. And the reason for this is that the system today is just to bring us to a certain level. No, if we keep adding them, they'll be degrading. So then, if we have to add the system back, then these people again are going to have to pay more.
See? But I thought isn't the $243 as you add, let's say, the next 1,000 NEM customers. Now paying $243 times their kilowatt size, right? That's revenue to us that we would put aside for utility scale
mitigation. That's correct.
Yeah.
But so if they don't pay that, that goes away, then we've degraded the system.
No, I agree. Right. In other words, you can either put in your own system,
right, or pay the $243.
Or pay the $243, but one way or the other, intermittency / storage has to be addressed. Either
right.
You pay for it and
well,
get your own,
address it.
Or if you want us to deal with it, we're charging you $243.
Yep.
All right, that's for new customers, right?
Yep.
And then for existing customers, we petition to change. Well, for all customers, we petition to change the NEM, the one for one, right?
Yep.
And I apologize. What did we reduce the one for one to? What did we reduce it to?
Our petition was to reduce the full credit. To avoid a cost over a five-year period.
Well, what was the charge?
And by the end of the fifth year, what's that number? I remember you're phasing it down. Do you remember
what our base rate is about 10 cents.
Okay, right.
And right, say, for example, today, our LEAC now is 13.4. So we're now at 23.4. So eventually, it's going to be down to about 13.4 plus.
You're phasing out the 10 over 5 years.
Yeah, we're phasing out the 10.
Okay.
Okay. And the 10 will be a little less based on other things, but
conceptually,
it's right about
that's the way to think about it.
Yeah.
Okay. The 10 goes away over 5 years for existing, right? Now, but if an existing puts in a battery, well, the NEM reimbursement goes away no matter what,
right?
It's going to go. That's our request.
Right.
Then, if an existing puts in a battery, what? That's good for that one.
That's
their own expense.
Yeah.
We're not
charging. They don't pay the $243.
And they're not paying the $243,
but
they're still only getting the NEM if we're approved.
Right.
The lower NEM, the phase down NEM reimbursement. And all new customers will know that the NEM reimbursement is being phased down. And by the way, you got to pay a fixed $243 or put in your own batteries.
So I'm glad that's clear because what we're saying is we already have a petition before the PUC that says we need to change the one-to-one credit to something that's equitable, right? And you have a proposal and say, this is our proposal. And you're saying, in addition to that, we have a proposal to require, starting June 1st, everybody to have a battery.
I thought only new customers.
New customers, that's right. Starting June 1st, everybody has to put in a new battery. New customers, okay? And what I think I'm hearing is, however, you can give the PUC a choice and say, if you grant us a rate for the battery portion, then that customer has a choice. He can put in a battery or pay $243.
So
that's what I think I'm hearing.
That's what I think I'm hearing as well.
Okay.
And then the only other question is, have we explored time of use? Is that something we're looking at as well? That it's sort of a third piece of the puzzle because that way, as the chairman said, you kind of have, the new persons have two type of choice, right? You either put in your own or you put in the 243. But as we've seen in other utilities, they create an incentive for you to help pay for that battery, right? Mm-hmm. We'll pay you for time of use if we can dispatch your energy at night instead of when we don't need it. We don't need it at 12, we need it at 6 o'clock. And we do a time of use. Are you thinking about proposing a time of use rate as a third piece of the stool?
At some point in the not too distant future, I'm not saying very near future, but not too distant future, time of use will come into play. But it can really, I won't propose that it come into play anytime before we get phase three done. And the reason for that is that the peak time is created by potentially really old residentials.
Mostly residential.
Mostly. So therefore, if you start shifting to a time of use today, there's going to be a significant impact on the residential. But because then you'll be paying more, remember, in the daytime, it's costing us about base load, 11 cents. In the evening, it's 19 cents. So therefore, that costs us to be, when you use time of use, that cost is associated to different areas. But even beyond that, even as we look towards electric vehicles and all of that, right? The phase three is going to shape the peak.
With utility scale, right?
With utility scale, it's going to shape the peak. Therefore, it's going to kind of even it, right? So therefore, now everything beyond that is going to require batteries, no, for shifting. So therefore, you're almost levelizing, but then there could be some opportunities now to reduce costs at certain things, but then it's not the magnitude of what you have today.
Will the phase three reduce the peak enough that we don't need to incentivize resident or other customers to continue to put more storage on the grid?
The phase three will significantly reduce the peak because remember, it's about 300 megawatt hours. So that basically shaves from 6 o'clock on to about 11, 12 o'clock.
So it's kind of like we don't really need to incentivize anyone to give us some more dispatchable solar because the phase three is doing all the work.
Yeah. That's correct. And again, there might be some opportunities, but right now it's too close for me to call. But all I know is that if we do it today, it's just not, I won't recommend it today at this point. No? Yeah. Because again, why? The future is going to be the same thing. We're going to take, we're going to shade the first phase, three is going to shade the peak. The next phase is going to catch and then start shaving down across the board. So that's how we keep shaving down on the loading, taking away fossil generation for renewables. The renewables are always there to kick in if necessary, but now we can generate at lower cost because the advantage we have is that when the generators are not producing the energy, they're not consuming fuel.
Right.
See?
But everybody wins.
Everybody wins. So therefore, even the peak demand, the reserve requirement, all of this are going to change as I come before you by June with a graph of what the future production is going to look like.
No? One of the things that I remember is a lot of things people were talking about is they put in batteries that they're going to charge and then be able to discharge. Now that battery costs us a lot higher than the one that just deals with the intermittency. And what I like about what John's saying is we're going to put the utility scale that's going to take care of that. And for this intermittency, we're going to give customers a choice. If they want to put in their own battery that's at a reasonable rate, just to catch the intermittency, they can do that. Or if they don't want to do it, then they can pay us and we take care of it for them. I like that. John, I think if you gave the PUC some options, they would say, we want to do that. You can say, look, if you don't do anything, then we're just going to require every new customer starting June 1st, you got to put a battery on. we can do that. We can just make it a blanket, you have to do this. Yep. We're saying, I like what you're doing. You're saying, I can give you a choice. If you cooperate, and we will go over the rate, fix the rate, you're going to make sure we justify the rate. But we get a rate that says $243, and it's like $20-some, you figured out. Or you can put in your own battery. It's your choice. Well, put in the battery.
You see, the early on the discussions were, and again, I'm going through the history of NEM and all of this. Mm-hmm. Early on the discussions were that when the batteries come, we don't need the system, and it'll be cheaper, and so on. So, well, the batteries have come, no? And what I estimate it to be is for just a frequency is somewhere around 7.5 cents a kilowatt hours, no? Mm-hmm. For them to completely get off the grid, they probably need 2 sets or 3 sets of that. So therefore, now you're talking about 15 to 20 some cents just to get off the grid. No?
That's a high price.
And that's not.
That's a good price.
So we're not trying to, you know, we're not trying to kill solar PV rooftops or anything. That's why also the choice is there. What this brings it down to is less than 2 cents a kilowatt hour.
Yeah.
So by GPA putting it in, because we, you know, we're doing it for all solar. It's not just arbitrary. Everything that we're putting in has to have batteries. There's no way we're going to get to
50%,
25, 50, or whatever without batteries.
Right.
No?
Right.
And we can do it for about 2 cents, less than 2 cents. So we're saying, let us
be your battery.
Let's work together. And we're not trying to kill solar PV. There's still an economies of scale that they can make it. Maybe paybacks may take a little longer if you own the system, no? But if you don't, I don't know how that will work out. No?
So John, the only thing is I would urge you to consider some language change down here in number 5 and just say, GPA is authorized to petition the PUC to create this rate schedule. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
You're authorized to go and petition them to create this rate schedule and fill it out. You know, everything you've talked about.
What page, Mr. Chair?
Oh, I'm sorry. This is page 5. Item, resolve number 5. You know, we're not opting anything tonight. I'm just suggesting that
by Tuesday.
By tomorrow.
Yeah. Sorry.
You know that, however, in the event the PUC creates, don't leave it up to the PUC. Say, however, GPA can petition the PUC to do this. You know, to this concept, and then if they like it and they approve it, then we have given our customers a choice. That's all I'm saying.
And the PUC a choice. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I always favored leveraging the requirement because the logic is, hey, when we're putting in it and we're putting in battery, we're dealing with our own storage intermittency issues for utility scale.
Right.
But then we're learning that, hey, there's an opportunity here either for all new providers of energy.
Yeah.
Either you deal with intermittency and storage on your own, or you let us do it. And if you let us do it, it's $243. It's $243, and then you can decide. And I like the fact that the technical requirement is really non PUCable. That's a technical requirement.
Yeah.
So we're sort of leveraging that strength of ours that says, okay, well, we're going to require this now. What's the best way to think about this?
Yeah.
Well,
you can
put in your own battery since we're requiring it, or you can allow us to be your battery. Until you think $243 per kilowatt hour is too much, and you've put in your own, you know, because I guess theoretically, right? If 5 years from now batteries finally get to where people think they're going to get, I could say, hey, I put in my new battery now.
I don't want to pay the
charge. Take me off the $243.
Give them the choice.
And then whether I like what you're saying, time of use is another tool we can play with to encourage. No matter what, we want batteries and intermittency addressed. Whether you do it or we do it, now we might give you another tool to encourage you. Right, but one way or the other, we're not adding any solar to the grid, whether it's ours or someone else's, without a provision for storage and intermittency.
Yeah.
And either we can do it, which, by the way, we're very affordable, or you can do it, or you can opt out later when when you've done it with batteries become cheaper. We just don't want, what I've always liked was, we've got 2,600 now. To get to 50%, there might be another 7,000 more needed. We can't be in a position 5-10 years from now going, gee, we just added another 5,000, now we need another battery. The system's, you know, going all over the place. And then non-solar ratepayers are paying for a battery, and solar customers tied to the grid still continue to get one for one and no provision for storage. That's just a cost shift that, and a sort of responsibility shift that really isn't fair to a non-solar customer who just says, hey, I'm okay with GPA, I'm going to stay with GPA.
Commissioner, talk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do the finances work out if you are allowing customers to jump in and out of it, right? So if it's, you either put in the battery or you pay $243, and then your financial model is based on, okay, well, here's the debt service, here's the cost per kilowatt hour. Your assumptions are that they stay with
in the system.
In the system, yeah. Right? So do the finances, John, work out to where, you know, if you have these, you know, let's say 10 years from now, battery storage becomes so ridiculously low, they're like, you know what, I'm just going to put my own system in. You have all of that revenue drain from the 243 that now they opt out and they get their own batteries. Have you looked at the potential impact of that?
Well, yeah. if it does get much lower, then we will also
but you're experiencing it 10 years before, right? So you got X amount of time that you got to pay for this battery.
Actually, the battery that we're putting in is already being paid off, being paid by the customers in the system, no? PV, non-PV customers right now. So this is really in anticipation of more and more. Now, if not too many end up, you know, if it doesn't go to another 10, 15, 20 megawatts, then maybe we won't have to. So this is a future battery that we're going to have to purchase if...
We'll be getting 243 for that.
Well, you'll be getting some money for it.
Yeah. Not paying for a battery. Even if a battery is cheap, they might just say, I think they'll make an economic decision.
And then the other part of it is... The other part of it is we can require from another contract to economies of scale, have them put in a little extra battery to cover what's necessary here. So I still feel comfortable that the this number really could change over time.
Okay.
Changed by the PUC. That's the best I can do.
I think the point that Commissioner Taco brings in is very important. I would ask you to think about, maybe we say to them, if you want to sign in to the program, you're signed in for 5 years. And then you can opt out again. So every 5 years, you can make a choice. Stay in, get out.
You're accumulating money.
Yeah, because what
just happens, in case.
Just in case, you know, so that every 5 years, your batteries have a real good, I mean, they're really good for what, 5 years, right? Or
10 years to the
10 years. Okay.
You talking about the utility scale or the residential?
The new battery putting in is warranted for 20 years, and of course they probably
trade it out.
Yeah. They're charging for 10 years.
Yeah, they're charging that.
But again, this is, you know, the point in time when we're going to add the battery is independent on how many are coming in.
Yep.
No.
Yep.
And John, so, what I'm saying is, you need to consider Commissioner Taco's point, which is right. You don't want to have your money invested, you know, your finances invested in something that nobody's going to pick up. So I would suggest that you give some thought, you know, to the concept. And you may not have to have it all done tonight, because we're saying to you can go to the PUC and offer them a choice. You can flush those things out more, but I think where you say you're in for 3 years and then you can get out, and if you're out, you can get in any time, but once you're in for 3 years. So just give that some thought. Yeah, all I'm saying is just give it some
to
thought.
To me, I don't think it'd be significant where they're going to opt out. Because and again, this charge could be changed over time. It could be even lower than what, because this amount that is here is really for the current battery, which was contracted for
that's the number
3 years ago. That's the numbers I'm using
yes,
today.
Yes, yes.
So therefore, the one I came in at 220. Yeah.
And at some point, you know, if only 1 megawatt came in, then maybe we absorb that and just let that contribute to the system in cost. Eh? If it starts to go lower, then the battery.
And all I'm saying is just think about, give those some thoughts. And
no,
there's only one more thing I'd like to point out, and I picked up on what you said to Simon about the time of use rates. And I thought I heard you say that as we go forward and we add more and more renewables, and we add renewables that charge batteries to discharge at night, and you shave that peak, you get to the point where maybe time of use rates won't be needed. Because time of use rates is, we have the bubble at night. So you want to change people's behavior and say, don't consume so much power at this time. This block of power, time of use rates is this block of power is more expensive than this block of power. That's what I remember time of use rates, isn't it?
But there's
the other way I've seen it done, Mr. Chairman, is that I'm going to give you an incentive to put in a battery that I can dispatch.
Oh, no. I'm just talking about time of use rates.
Right. So the incentive is the time of use rate. In other words, right now we're putting in a battery at our cost, right? We're going to charge $243. Now, if we wanted to, whether we put in the battery or you put in the battery, if 1,000 more people want to be solar, there's a battery need. Now the question is, does GPA buy another battery after 1,000, or we give an incentive to that 1,000 to better afford their battery? Either way, a battery is going to get paid for by
someone. And I get that. So therefore, the proposals that we're kicking around, the concepts you're kicking around, take care of that. I'm just going back to the original concept of time of use rates. And the original time of use rate concept was, you have a hump, so you try to incentivize people to not use power at that time, and to find other times of the day to use power, so you level it up. That's time of use rates. Forget batteries for a minute.
That's just when to use
that's,
the system.
That's
right.
Just when usage.
They're like brothers and sisters, those two concepts.
But all I'm saying, John, is that what I heard you say is, as we go and we evolve with the technology of more and more photovoltaic cells and more batteries and batteries to charge and discharge, that actually takes care of that, so it addresses that and in a different paradigm shift. That's all I'm saying.
And then
that's another piece of the puzzle.
Yeah, you're correct, Mr. Chair. Both of you are correct. And then another part is in the low load period of the day.
Right.
You will try to use potentially time of use for people to charge. This is when we start adding.
This is for those who want to shift their own.
When we start adding more and more electric vehicles.
Right.
We want them in the low load so that we don't have to back down the generator to less efficient.
But we don't want them to charge it.
So there is a point, but.
Like you said, we want to charge it at 10 o'clock.
There's going to be different incentives in the future.
No, John, all I'm saying is there are a lot of different moving targets here, but it's all good.
This is the beginning.
And I like this because if we give the PUC an incentive to look at this too and say, look, if you don't do anything, we're just going to say, okay, starting June 1st, everybody put a battery in. That's just the way
it is. Buy your own battery.
Buy your own battery.
But you're not going to help us pay for a utility scale battery, then you got to buy your own.
Yeah. But we're giving you a thought.
No more solar without a battery.
Yeah. And we're giving
you.
And we're saying, look, PUC, if you want to go down the road, we've got some thoughts. That's all.
This is a question regarding the ESS battery requirements. I mean, what kind of cost differential are we looking at? On what it would cost just to address the intermittency issue, as opposed to being able to, be self-sustaining, right, where they're not actually pulling from the grid.
The phase two just has batteries for intermittency. Very little load shifting capability. It's not really meant. And those were coming in at 8.5 cents a kilowatt hour.
This is for a residential, not the utility.
No, the utility scale. I can only go by the utility scale. And then what I do know is that for a battery, Tesla offered battery, which was even mentioned here in the island, that's one that would be used. My calculation of that is 7.5 cents a kilowatt hour, just for one set. And one set doesn't take them through the night, no, or through the whole day.
Yeah, I'm just referring to, I'm trying to understand the cost impact to a customer. Yeah. If we're, you know, based on this resolution, what would a customer who wants to install solar and is now required based on this resolution to install an intermittency, you know, moderating battery?
So it's about the 20, based on the 243 per kilowatt, I believe it's about a 1.8 cents a kilowatt.
That's what it would cost them to do it?
Yeah, on the average. Because what you do is you take their installed kilowatt, no, times 20% capacity factor, that's the amount of energy. So you take this total monthly for the month, it cost per month, right, $20-some per month times 12, 240, divide just by that, that's less than 1.8 cents a kilowatt hour, compared to the 7.5 if they were to install their batteries.
Okay, 7.5 is if they install it themselves. Yeah, so and that's a battery just to address intermittency?
Yeah, okay. And the reason why I'm saying the 8.5 cents is the phase two. The one that we received, which is at the OPA now, is 11 cents. 8.5, 9.5, 10.5. So that's 2.5 cents different between a load shifting and an intermittency at this point in time. So therefore, we do have the economies of scale, the numbers, the everything. You know? And then I'm not sure people want to deal with batteries because there's still the issue.
They have to dispose of it.
How do you dispose of it after 10 years? And
buy a new one every decade.
Yeah. So again, we're trying, you know, we can still promote the whole sequence. And we're providing the partnership, if you will, to make it happen. No? But we ourselves are putting in batteries. There's no doubt that there's necessary. No? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So this resolution we're going to consider tomorrow?
Yes.
With the potential changes to the...
Well, that's what I'm saying. I'm hoping that he makes some changes.
To the resolve?
To the resolve portion.
I just had a question on the last whereas clause, though. Line item, line 47 through 50. So the last sentence reads, GPA recommends that all new NEM customers must have frequency control capability or energy storage systems by June 1st?
Yeah.
Do you mean all new customers from June 1st after?
Not yeah, beginning June 1st. I'm sorry.
Because this reads
no, I'm sorry. I meant after, to say beginning, after, beginning
after,
June.
Or after June 1st.
After June 1st.
Either. They have to have it.
Yeah.
Okay, so.
So, in other words, if you're going to put in a solar system after June 1st, you're coming in to, you know, to.
But if you're putting one in the next month,
April,
you're working on it,
March,
you're protected. Everyone's getting enough time.
Yeah,
because that was the other aspect, remember, when you first proposed.
Remember, I wanted it January.
They said, let's give them enough notice.
I didn't want it April 1st, it was May 1st, now we're giving people enough time.
I think June 1st is a lot of time.
And so are you going to also amend that whereas clause where it says or avail yourself of the GPA provided battery, or is it you just going to leave that in the resolve section? Because you're giving them options, right? The whereas clause doesn't give them an option.
I can add another whereas, which says whereas we will, GPA will petition, to petition the PUC for the option, no?
Okay.
Yeah, we can do that.
Good discussion. Yeah.
And then, Mr. Chairman, also just look at language that just says, you know, whereas these moves will actually continue to promote the development of renewable energy on Guam, whether and gives the choice to the individual, the flexibility to do it, you know, to add it in the way that is in their best economic interest, or however you want to word it, right? We can be their battery, they can put in their own battery, it's up to them, right? But we're providing options for both. Something like that.
Yeah.
Now remember, the reason people may say, well, we don't need batteries forever. You do need batteries at some point, and we're at that point. Remember the duck curve? The center, you can only produce so much in the daytime, and then you have to store it. So basically, that's where we're, you know, we're kind of where we can keep backing off generators in the future because we have so many renewables. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any further discussion on that one? No? Okay, let's just discuss it.
Let's try it.
Next one.
Mr. Chair, if I may switch to the third resolution first before we go to the second, and I'm just trying to get some productivity, not productivity, I'm trying to get some done, or the, actually real critical for us.
Your choice, go, your choice.
2006, and really this is the world for a new bid on residual fuel oil. The bid is expiring this...
the current fuel oil contract.
September, the contract. There were options for renewable, however, Mobil did not want to implement the renewable.
Any idea why?
Well, part of it is they're concerned about this, the shipping, the requirement internationally now that, you know, they have the... tankers coming into facilities will have to use medium cleaner oil and stuff.
Cost.
So they're not sure what their shipping costs may be. But to me, you know, it's February, September.
Going.
So so what we're going to do is go ahead out and rebid. And we're going to go to the PUC. Basically, everything is the same as what we did before.
So, John, question, what? When does the current contract expire?
August 31st.
Okay, August 31st.
Yeah.
So we have the time to put this all together.
So we get this there.
You have the time?
Yeah, 6 months.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
So
usually when we did, I think.
Yeah.
So, 6 months.
You know, we're going to talk to AOJ and just say, hey, this is the same thing. We just got to get it, move it out. No?
Well, so, you need to make sure they understand the time.
Yeah.
So the three year RFP time frame that takes you to August 31st, 2023.
Correct.
How does that jive with the consent decree?
Consent decree says August 2022, no, which will already be into a third year. 2 years only brings us to before that, and the new power plants are coming on the line into October, no, the
of 2022.
In case there's any delays or for whatever reason, hopefully not, no? Then at least we start that 1 year and then another option. The option for the option years, really, I don't see that happening, but at least for the 3 years.
So you have the option years going a year from when you expect the plan to come on?
A year beyond.
A year beyond.
Yeah. So we're really covering 1 year, about
just
1 year. Yeah.
But the consent decree, though, has us taking that unit offline
October
a year before
2022. Yeah. But if the power plant doesn't go on, then
you need fuel.
You have to run it.
Yeah,
it
won't.
And then we have penalties on the partner side.
Yeah.
Hey, you're late.
We only buy fuel 6 months at a time, anyways, right?
No,
can't buy
no,
years.
Every 35 days?
No, we. Every other months. Every other
45 days, yes.
At most. Most.
Yeah, 45 days.
We hold about anywhere from 30 to 90 days of supply. Yeah. So, every year, like every 45 days.
Okay. No, John, I do have a question on that. You know, if you, when you do negotiate the fuel oil contract, they don't have any minimum purchase you have to make, right? Are there any minimums? No, I'm asking questions.
I
don't know.
Well, I think they're used to our consumption. We're a pretty consistent consumer.
Purchase data, I don't think there's not a minimum, but there's we give them the annual usage that we have for the plant.
And that's what they're doing.
Yep.
I'm sorry.
Oh, sorry.
So that's shipped in containers, vessels.
No, tankers.
The tankers. What comes in containers?
They bring a tanker. Filled with oil every 45 days. Recently, we order about 200,000 to 250,000 barrels. And two types, low sulfur and high, depending on what we need. No?
Where your tank levels are.
That's why we have all these storage tanks. Then. Mm-hmm. When we go to one field, then makes it a lot easier to manage.
You know, so I'm just saying, you know, when you do your bid, you know, if you don't specify, if they agree, nobody agrees. You're giving them a range, but there's no minimum.
Yeah.
That's important.
Yeah, but
so wouldn't you have to take the whole vessel when it comes?
Yeah, but we order it.
What I mean is, in ordering, in other words, before, they don't schedule a vessel every 2 weeks, every 2 months. They order.
We order.
They
order.
They say,
like
we need,
full vessel.
You know, when they get the tanks down to like, 60-day supply or something?
Yes.
I forget.
And you place it.
Then you place an order.
We know.
But what I'm saying is there's no requirement that you place so many orders in a year. That's my point. If there isn't, that's why I asked the question. If there's no minimum, you got to order at least one tank every 2 months.
But we don't get involved in the bid specification.
No. I'm reminding them. All I'm saying is they
give them guesstimated volumes.
Yeah. No. And all I'm saying is I'm giving management some thoughts. So hey, if you're currently not required to have a minimum to say buy 12 tankers in 1 year, then that's good, because then if you don't need that much fuel oil as we go forward, then you can say okay, we won't need a shipment for 3 months.
There's a few committees that work out all the usage, everything, and then the order, so that we have enough tankets to accept a full load.
So historically, on average, we're buying 8 to 10 tankers a year, something like that. Once every 45 days, we bring in a full tanker load, fill up, and we're filling up our storage tanks, on the bottom side and draining them off the top side to keep them. We've been doing that since John had black hair. Which is a long time
ago, right? Yeah.
Okay. Now, John, what's next?
Next ministry is the 2020-05. And again, this is really, this issue about condominium rates has been around for a substantial number of years. And then, we did tell the customers that they need to file their petition with the PUC, which they did. So, we did an initial cost of service outline for working with ALJ Horecki. And so then the ALJ also has asked for our recommendation on this. So we looked through it, and this is kind of our recommendation where it's really, we're still, it's really a policy goal. Where do we go? We're believing that we should go towards eventually a full cost, cost to serve rate. So when we look at the condominium rates at this point, based on the latest cost of service done by our consultant, there's like an 8% difference. No, mm-hmm. We also, I know that the petition is trying to go to residential rates, but the residential rates are only 18% subsidies to the residential rates today. So therefore, to go from here to there, I think we're kind of trying to say, let's set a policy towards eventually getting everybody towards a cost to serve, because there are some opportunities in the near future, readjustments.
So you're not phasing, that's why you're proposing a new rate, and we're just going to stay there for a while and then continue to evaluate if we're going to migrate from these subsidies, right?
Yeah. So this rate now is really looking at the at their cost to serve and putting them right around cost of service, and in consideration that they most of this there's several condominiums today that place, put their systems in without individual meters. We don't want this to be we don't recommend that this be a trend for future condominiums. We're saying anything, as soon as the PUC approves it, any new construction after that has to be following if they're going to have condominiums with individual and that's what they want, then they have to put in the meter basis, so then each of the customers can
apply.
So
we want them
apply.
To put in individual meters, or we give them a choice?
We're kind of grandfathering this group, no?
Right, but in the future, we're saying you either put in individuals, and here's this rate, but if you don't put in individually...
No. In the future, you're still going to have, this is the rate as it exists today, is your rate.
the rate as it exists today is the rate for
like what they're paying now before we make a change to this thing. The current rate is based on their demand, what they apply for, and all of that.
Because they're already wired the way they're wired.
That's right. So in the future, you either rewire it, and you either construct it that way, but expect to pay this rate, the existing rate, or put individual meters and expect to each individual will apply for individual rates just like an apartment or anything else. But the construction, you know, you cannot reduce your cost and at the same time ask for reduced rates. No? So that's what we're trying to propose.
There are not many condos that are wired that way with just one meter, are there? How many customers?
I mean, individually metered condominiums?
No, single meter.
Single meters.
How many customers?
For Schedule P, we have about 10 customers. On Schedule J, we have about 15 customers.
So total is a single meter.
Yeah, single meter. So one massive meter.
G does only one.
So we have very few with single meter.
Yeah.
Yes, very few with a master meter that's sub meters everybody.
And then I had this question, and maybe Graham can jump in here too. So condominium has a meaning. So I've often seen the other phrases, multifamily housing, because not all apartments are condominiums. Condominium is a legal, it's a term of law, right? There's an association, there's all this stuff, whereas you can have a six-unit apartment building with a single meter or separate meter, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering whether condominium... It's sort of the same issue we're running into when you have a large resident 6,000 square foot house compared to a 1,000 square foot house, but we call them both residences, and then you get the large houses going, hey, just because I'm 6,000 square feet and have a swimming pool, I'm a resident, right? And I've found over the many years that causes sort of a you're always having to explain, yeah, you're a resident and you're a resident, but your resident is this big and your resident is this big. And you're charged differently. So I'm trying to kind of avoid this problem with condominium. Because to me, condominium has a legal definition. I think of multifamily complex, right? Multi-unit complex, or a better word than condominium. Because in law, condominium has a meaning, right? And then I don't, maybe Graham could jump in, or have you thought about that? Or I just, now's the time to make sure we simplify and make the rate class the name of the rate class a more accurate description, so that, you know, I don't want, when you build a six-unit apartment, you're not necessarily making it a condominium. You're just a guy building six units, right? But we're going to say you get the condominium rate, and I kind of go, and you might go, well, what is that?
It could be a condominium. Yeah. You could.
But it also could not be. So I'm just saying, because condominium it's a term of law, whereas multifamily isn't, or multi-unit, or... You know, just describes the building. It doesn't describe, where to me, condominium, I'm looking for a better word than condominium, because condominium has meanings in other contexts. And in the same way that residence is confusing someone that has a 6,000 square foot house and a 1,000 square foot house, yes, we call them residents, but then we have to explain, oh, but you got a demand charge and you don't have a demand charge. You know, maybe we have to go to like large residence, small residence. I'm trying to find, take advantage of the fact that you're creating a rate class, right? Can we also name it in a way that is more universally understood by whoever ends up in this rate class? That you don't have to be a condominium to end up in this rate class. You can just be a large part.
Let me give you a different take on that. Because in Agana, there's a building called Pedro's Plaza, and they have a rezoning thing. They want to turn it into condominiums.
Right.
So it's an office building. It was built and designed as an office building. Now they're turning it into a condominium. So your name is the service we provide is requiring three-phase power, so much demand, so many things.
Right. So that's why I'm saying you could call that a multi-unit complex from a rate class. If he wants to call his building a condominium, he can call it a condominium. We don't, but that doesn't change our rate class.
I think our mistake, right? I think we keep saying condo, but there is what they call multi-family dwelling
in our policy.
Yes,
of course.
So we use that.
I agree with that.
There is already.
Well, no, they put a big sign on there.
And the reason I say even multi-unit, because the chairman brought up a good example. This office building is now, they're not going to condominiumize it. Right?
Well, that's what they're,
but it's still multiple units in a 10-story building. Yeah. That is, and it may not even be multifamily. Now you're seeing commercial, residential, mixed use in a single building. Mm-hmm. So maybe we can do some research. How other community? What do they call it? Do they all call it multi-unit, multi? You know, because
multi-use.
Yeah.
I don't know. But I'm just saying. That.
But I to me, condominium is a dangerous word, just because I think it confuses. There's many perceptions of what a condominium is. And yet you can have a building, like Pedro's Plaza, could be a good example. It could be half condominiums and half commercial. So
I don't know. It's said rezoned to condominiums.
Well, but I mean, I'm just saying that's a choice of the developer. But right. You also see lots of development now.
Could choose to do
mixed. It's a mix. They have retail on the bottom, housing on the top, right? They have clinics. So, but in all cases, it's a multiple unit with separate meters, right? And I found that over the many years we've been involved with it, I find things like residential and commercial, those words have so much generic meanings that we're always having to explain to somebody, well, I'm a commercial, well, I'm a commercial. Well, yeah, but you're different for these reasons. I'm trying to get more precise if we can. And I think condominium has a term of law.
We'll work on it for tomorrow. Yeah,
okay. I keep coming back to multi-unit or multi-family, something like that, but not condominium. Right? But think about it. I mean, I love the concept. It's just...
Yeah. When does it take effect, though? There's nothing. Just upon approval by the PUC, it goes into effect. You don't give them time to adjust.
Well, we're the ones making the adjustment.
No, it doesn't have an effective date in the resolution. It just says upon approval by the PUC.
Right, because we're petitioning for a new rate.
But they'll give us when this takes effect.
Everyone else, it's already a current. A customer, they built their building. They can't change the building, but they may fall into a different rate class.
Yeah. Again, this will go through bill payers, real bill rights, so there'll be more hearings and all of those things.
Okay.
But it's just to get it started.
From our side, we start in the process.
That's what the PUC asks us to do. We've done the work. Yes. Now we throw it out and see what happens.
Next.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Commissioner Tuffin, first question. John?
Just on the rate impact to the various customers that the resolution will impact, you're actually seeing a reduction?
Yeah.
They'll see a reduction in rates?
Yes. Like, yeah. I'm sorry.
Go ahead, sir.
Okay, sorry. If you turn to page 43, there's actually, we analyze it per customer.
Mm-hmm.
So we have scheduled P and Schedule J, and we couldn't give them put the customer's name on it, so we just put one. So the rate impact, the proposed rate impact, is the reduction. So it's -21, 24% reduction from the current bill.
Mm-hmm.
So in Schedule P, a lot of customers will see a reduction. On Schedule J, most of them will get a reduction.
Every customer in rate P will
get
a reduction.
Yes. Okay. On Schedule Rate J, if they do elect it, they won't have much impact. They will have more impact, but there's like three to four customers who won't have an impact. Not much reduction, but there's two customers who actually have to pay more.
1%. Yeah.
And John, what is the difference between a Rate P customer and a Rate J customer?
Yes.
Speaking of how we name rates.
Yeah. People get confused that we are actually scheduling based on your commercial or residential. It's not the case. It's based on power consumption and what kind of face meter do you have. So a customer for R has like less than 200 kilowatts per day. And if you go beyond that, you go to Schedule J. And in Schedule J, if you have a demand over 200 kilowatts, then you go to Schedule P.
Right. So again, and we don't have to solve it tonight or tomorrow. I'd love to think of a better way than calling it P and J, if there is. And you just think we don't have to rename them today.
Yeah.
Let's think about, because I mean the fact that I have to ask this question. I've been around this business for a long time. I don't know what is the difference, right? And it's demand. It's
yes.
A number of things. Right?
Yes. It's based on demand and also how much power you're consuming per day.
So
the demand is. if you are large power, you say you require 1 megawatt transformer. So that's your, so we have to make have capacity to cover
right.
your.
So is it better to call it the large demand rate? Small demand rate. I don't know. Just just think about it, because J&P that mean. I mean, talk about generic. J&P means a lot of things to different people, but it has no meaning unless you. If you have to explain it after you say rate J&P, there's something wrong with what we're calling it, because you have to. It doesn't explain it, right?
Yes.
And maybe we can think of down the road renaming some of these to make it more easy.
I agree with Commissioner Sanchez because when you say R. They assume it's residential.
Yeah,
that's all you're talking about was residential.
Yes.
So maybe, you know, your lettering system was a lettering system you guys
came
up with.
The old way it was done.
Yeah, back in 1984.
But people simply assume, oh, R means I'm residential.
Yes. Yeah,
I mean, I know when we joined the PUC, we didn't think about changing the name. We were just trying to get it going, right? Yeah. But these days.
But you know, that
this hasn't been changed, I know for the record.
Since you had black hair.
1984.
Yeah.
1970.
Which is a long
time. I had hair.
Those nomenclatures,
But why would, you know, looking at your rate comparison to rate schedule, why would you propose a rate that is different than the cost-based rate?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. We did ask a cost consultant about that. Because, for example, if I look on page,
47.
So page 47, phase 3 or 4P. So that month, so 240. Let's say for the cost base of a monthly charge is $214. So right now we're going from $59. For a sudden jump to 214 would be difficult for some customers. Even for schedule J, if they currently they're paying. $38 per month, and all of a sudden you're to 214, we'd be considered a rate shock. So when you talk to the consultant, they said only they have a 3-year phases to go in, but they said that they never go that high of a level. So what they do is he recommended just using $59 for the monthly charges. Then what he did is we increased the demand charge.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just because demand charge requires this is really driver of your infrastructure. But the customer service charge is more the billing, those things. And so whatever revenue requirement is, after you get the revenue from the monthly plus the demand charge, is the energy charge. So that's why the energy charge is 6 cents, because after you add all those costs together, and you buy the remaining, you divide by what kind of energy they usually gonna produce. So that came out was like 6 cents. So this rate is actually lower than schedule J and P, a little bit lower, except for the later block, not the first block.
Right. So I guess my question is, this would suggest that you're subsidizing these rate schedules based on the cost base.
Yeah.
Rate, right?
This is not what we're proposing is not subsidizing anybody. This is what the total revenue generated is the cost of service.
For this group.
So this is what's going to cost us to service this condominium, multi-dwelling units.
And that differential then really gets applied back to the residential rate. But we're spreading that across 40,000 people.
Yeah.
And that's why the impact is so small.
But it is suggesting that you're subsidizing these customers, right?
Because
if you weren't, wouldn't you just charge the cost-based rate?
Yes. So if you look on a very portions as revenue from rates, if you do the cost base, it's about 1.465 million. If you use proposed this rate, well, we are probably generating $1.422 million in revenue. So they're very comparable to
So it's not a big subsidy.
No, it's not a big subsidy. It's very comparable. So we are from page. I'm sorry. 49. So either 47 or 49, we'll show the comparison between, for example, page 49 is comparison J schedule versus the cost base plus the proposed. And the revenue requirement for the J is, using the cost base, about 1.465 million, and the proposed, if you use the $59 for monthly charge plus $12 for demand and 6 cents for energy charge, it's about 1.422 million. So the two differences is very comparable.
So John, is the way to read this that basically the size of the subsidy is J's subsidy is 3.4% to the residential side, and when you do the math, we're going to bump the residential side up slightly, 4.7, and reduce this class 3.4. Is that the rate of read this? That's the way I want to make sure I'm thinking about this.
No. What the consultant did was look at, let's say, because they were demanding that we should give them the residential rate.
Right.
Yeah, so what we did is he compared it. Let's say we get it, let's assume you're 1 meter,
right,
and you're billing them the rate. So it would be $15 plus 1 meter, which is $15. And they said the first 500
kilowatt
is subsidized, so it's about 6.9 cents.
Okay.
And after that, it's about 8.6 cents. So he times it by energy, how much they will pay for. So from there, he said, if you do the energy rate, you're generating is about $1.4 million if you use straight residential rate. But in schedule J, currently is producing $1.47 million. Mm-hmm. So if you do that,
you're knocking out 3%.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
But in knocking out that 3%, you're transferring back to the other class, right?
No, actually, we're just
trying to equalize it. Well, where does that money go, though? When you reduce this group of people by 400,000,
that's going to be less revenue to us
to GPA overall. Yeah. Oh, so
yeah.
We're okay.
We're not shifting it.
The plan is
to over the coming years to start getting everybody towards cost to serve, and this is probably the beginning.
It's like an interim system.
Yes.
You're eating the change in rates, but you're not recovering based on the cost base rates as much as you would otherwise.
Yes, that's correct.
All right.
So if I look at this one, I'm reading on that line that says all energy towards the bottom.
Yes.
It's 0.15569, 15569, 15569. So you're saying that this class is basically that?
No, but energy is the LIAC part. Right.
Oh, LIAC. Oh,
right.
Energy.
And LIAC was before we lowered it. That was before we lowered it. That was the guy was doing the rate case.
Yes.
We hadn't lowered the LIAC yet.
Yes.
Okay.
So
but
I did
it's the fixed cost, which fuel is fuel. You use it, we pass it on to you, right?
Yeah.
But the way we've allocated the fixed cost, the base rate side of it, is where we're basically reducing. It sounds like we're trying to equalize multifamily housing to the residential rate.
Yes.
And these are the numbers that are emerging, and we'll sacrifice some revenue at the GPA side.
Yes.
And we'll give that back to the multifamily so that it looks like it's more equivalent, even though you're in a multifamily structure with 1 meter.
Yes.
It's still, at least your residential rate only has 1 meter too, right? So you're trying to equalize it.
Yes. But is that unfair to the multifamily complexes / condos?
What's going
to
go down?
That have single meters?
Well, in effect, they're going to save 3%, right?
I think the question is, how does that compare with the big units that have...
No, they're already getting the other rate, right?
They're getting the residential.
They're getting the residential rate already.
Yes.
Which is subsidized, really.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
So it's just that we don't want to make a bad thing worse by bringing them all the way down to that.
Yeah, I got it.
So,
we'll eat the difference, the big wheel.
Yeah. So the other thing we asked for was the... So a modification on rate schedule R was currently was designed, this language currently was originally for single phase. So there's some individual metered condominiums or individual homes that have three phase meters, but their consumption, because in the old days they might have a pool or central unit, but the technology has changed, or their consumption has changed, but back in the 70s, 80s, they might have needed three phase meters. But now with the new technology, you only need single phase. But since they already built three phase, they were getting charged on schedule G. Since the consumption is less than 1,000 or 2,000,
we're going
to
help them too.
So it sounded unfair to give condominiums with three phase meters
the break.
Not give these other individuals a break.
We're trying to correct as best as possible the construction.
Yeah,
when energy was very low in the early, 70s, didn't make that much difference. But because it's higher now, but also they, you know, it's been 35, 40 years really, and so they've made a lot of investment into the system already. So.
And so that's in the resolve item one. That
does that, John? Yes, that is also in the resolution and also on the tariff modification as an amendment, Exhibit A.
But nowhere in here, this is what you mentioned, John, where you're going to require new construction to have meters per individual dwelling.
It's on the, it may not be in the resolution. Is it, or is on the
is that
the schedule?
Yes. So
yeah, we should put in the resolution.
So,
is it an Exhibit A?
Yeah, it's an Exhibit A. What we did is said, why didn't say you, we will not, what we said is, you are, if you are, we assume, let's say, approved first, is what if, let's assume that the PUC approved for tariff. So what we said is, any condominium that is on service or applied before April 1st will get scheduled D for the condominiums. And after that, so we said is some customers when I'm not going there because they're actually gonna lose money. Because the bill actually costs like three customers. So we said they have an option to elect it, to option to elect in or option to elect not to be on it. And we also said that once you're in it, you can't go to any other rate class. So this is like a one-time.
Pick your
lane.
Yes.
Like so, this bandwagon will stay where you are. Huh?
So anybody else who come in will not be eligible. So they have to engineer their building to.
You have to properly engineer.
Yes.
No.
You know that's the reason why I thought that I just thought of the fact that the water meters, for example, are different. They don't care what building you're serving. It's 3/4, 1 inch, 2 inch, 4 inch. And that all depends on how much water you got to put in. Yeah, so if it's only 3/4, you only put in so much. But if it's a 2 inch or 6 inch or 8 inch for the big hotel, that's a lot of water you got to bring in. So there's a bigger charge.
It's easier to
it doesn't matter what the use is.
It's easier to design water rates than power.
Because the use is immaterial. Because
you could have a little house consume like a big apartment, depending on what the heck they got in their house, right?
Yeah, if they big refrigerator, whatever they want to do.
So, I mean, I'll give you a good example, right? So, our friends in the medical, friends in the cannabis industry, that's going to be 24/7 consumption of power. So how do we differentiate between a residence grower and a 10,000 square foot grower? What rate are they going to be put on?
Yeah. So for most customers, for residential, is for 220. I'm sorry.
Schedule.
So the threshold is 20. So the consumption has to be less than
6,000
kilowatts per month. So they said here.
Anything
it's not
beyond that?
You have to go to schedule.
You're going
to
charge more expensive.
J.
Schedule.
You go to higher cost.
Yes. So you get a higher charge.
Yes.
General service.
Right.
Yes.
Whether you're residential or not. Yeah.
Yes.
So you're going to catch those people.
Yes.
John, correct me if I'm wrong, because I like what Francis asked. But if you want to do that and you put in monster chillers and you want to be a 10,000 square foot cannabis grower, you're going to consume a lot of energy, and you're going to have huge demand, and you're going to be in a higher class.
Yeah.
Yes.
Great class.
Yes.
So size matters. That's where I was trying to explain
it's not square footage; it's the consumption that's going to.
It's draw, and volume, right?
Yes.
But the problem with demand and with just draw, and this is like Jeff Pyrskill was the best example I've ever heard in all the years we've done that. The 1 year he would, the 1 month he had, the 1 day he has that concert. When he needs this much draw. We have to design the system that, hey, when you want it, this is what we're going to give it. It's like I was explaining to a customer. If you buy a boat, you can't pull it with a Toyota. Now, you get a big truck. Now, you don't pull that boat every day. You're not in the...
Changing the truck.
But you still got to buy that truck.
Right.
So that's, the truck is your demand charge. For the one time a month, two times... Well, speaking of boat owners, right? The two, three times you pull your boat, you better pay for that truck, right? unless you want to pull it with your Toyota. You know.
Yeah. So go. Let's go to page 51.
Yes.
Okay. So you're on page 51.
Yes.
And that's schedule rate G.
Yes.
And then go to page 52.
Yes.
And tell me, how do you take 300,000 or 311,591, and which schedule is it belong to, on greater than 1,000 or greater than whatever that delta is there? Because one is $11 million or $12 million projected revenue, another one. Where do those belong? Can you explain that?
Yes. So what the cost contents did is he looked at the rate classes on the customers.
Yeah, so go back. So this schedule G on page 51
yes.
is which one on page 52?
Yes. So there's only actually on one customer in G that has this condominium. So he'll be put it on the condominium, the cost of service of $5.7 million. Yes. And his project revenue is 6.3.
No. Okay, so you're taking that. Okay, got it.
Yeah, yes.
Okay, got it. That's how you apply it.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, apparently on the one, there's only one customer.
And that's sort of, it's good that was a sort of another myth. There was a perception that we had thousands of condominiums.
And
we don't have that many, when you think at the end of the day. It's mostly single family residential.
You know, it's interesting about the marijuana thing. The Czar board, our condo board, which is prohibited in our rules. Any manufacturing, distribution, or growing of marijuana anywhere.
On your premises.
Anywhere. Because of the issue of cost to the association and insurance.
Because it's a single meter? Because it's a single meter?
For water.
For water.
Only for water.
Power individual.
And you use a lot of water.
Yeah.
Plus, the liability, the insurance companies are going to go after the condos.
How do you know how much water they use?
They use a lot of water. I think we're doing research.
Her proprietary job.
Remember, I was chief of police, right?
Where she had to.
She has no so many skills.
This is a big issue. This is a big issue. No, there are liabilities involved for insurance. If something happens, there's a fire, something goes wrong in the manufacturing. Plus, we prohibited on-premises distribution.
You're not manufacturing
sales,
ice.
How about machetes?
Growing.
Did you guys prohibit machetes?
No.
Yeah, no machetes
allowed. No machetes
allowed.
No.
Okay.
Congratulations.
So you
got, that's how you catch
questions?
The
mission.
No. Good.
Okay. We'll see you tomorrow night.
No.
You're going to go to your
GM report. Very quickly.
Yeah.
I just want to show you something.
I need the resolutions.
Oh yeah. Yep. Okay.
We're done with the resolutions. Right?
Yeah. Done with the resolutions. Yeah. Go in the GM report.
Okay.
No, that's all I meant.
I'm just very quick.
Sure. Yeah. We
have dinner at
6:30. You've never been quick.
Okay. Again, the key part is we're also holding Tavros number 2. We're going to be down for about 35 days. No? We need to prepare a lot of boiler tubes. It's really been very difficult to keep up. Again, but we should have adequate capacity at this point. Here's our peak. It's just starting to creep up. Next. Again, this is net metering. We have about 2,086, I believe. And again, nothing's really changed in the, less than 20 per month coming in. But please also note that this been, we haven't done anything and it's been down that low, so it's not like the batteries are going to kill net metering. No? I looked at this. Next. Energy sales, again, we're kind of dipping down a little bit at this point, but that's a 12-month moving average scenario. That's for 29 as of December 2019. Next. Demand side management, we have 4.3 million. We have, I think, we have enough to get through March. So we're working on what Fred requires, so hopefully he addresses it in March.
John, just quick, we did apply for the demand side management to be folded into the LEAS,
right?
And did they say when they might review it?
We're answering the questions.
Okay.
It's FYI.
It's in review, okay.
So hopefully by next month. Next. But 4.3 has been put in, PUC docket. Again, the multi, the PMC is out for bid. They approved the LEAC, the 13.4, this is from the last month. Guide path, renewable, that's before the OPA, and there's a lot of scheduled hearings over the next month.
And I apologize, PMC is 1 and 2?
Carver's 1 and 2. That's the one we couldn't extend anymore, right. So we need
to put out a bid.
So that's PUC has approved that, and we have already issued it. USA consent decree, again, they filed with the court. And about March 13 is when the comment period is over. And then after that, the judge will decide. No? Okudu power plant, again, work continues. They have to do the environmental impact assessments. And start applying for the different permits required. So I'll give you more of an update over the next month or two. Right now, it's just a lot of work. You gotta go through historical preservation, all of those things because of the pipeline, everything, you know. So, you know, I won't really go into a lot of that stuff now, but in the next couple of months, we'll be able to talk more. Energy storage system, I'm happy to say that they'll start the third party. See, we have the LG, the provider, and we're the owners, and we have a third party that knows the system for commissioning is coming in. And once they come in, then we're going to go through the whole testing.
How long do you think it'll take before we turn it on?
They'll start turning it on in the first week of March.
Wow. We're in like the fourth year of our 2-year battery program.
Yep.
Right? Yep. It's forever to get in. It's like our meters on the water.
That gives you an idea of what I said about the evolution of battery system.
It's good. We're close.
I think we could say we were fortunate that there were some fires that occurred, which let them redesign some of these things, you know, because of early on. So it takes time before you get all the bugs out of a particular technology. And this is
it's their risk.
So again, the whole process here is that's from our bonds, 35 million. It's really a frequency control, 40 megawatt, 10 megawatt hour, 15 minutes, you can hold at 40. And again, you can hold 15 or 10 megawatts at 1 hour. So it's just a battery life, warranty 25 years. They have the O&M services. We have the bulk. It's about $250,000 a year, somewhere around there. And again, the two locations, Agatnia and Talapoco. And here's the next pictures. I'd like to give pictures. Again, this is the Agatnia.
John, just real quick on that. What are your forecasts on the impact of the under-frequency load shedding from those batteries?
The initial load was about 70 to 80% of the
reduction
in the number of outages. So I think, and again, so this will probably still be around 70%. You're still going to have a little bit, but not as much, because that curve now is going to, the battery is going to catch that curve earlier. It's like a generator going up quickly.
I'm just thinking that if it does come online before the PUC reviews the resolution that we are going to look at tomorrow, right, it makes a good case to say, this is why, exactly what we're trying to do. You know, if you can graph out the reduction.
We can use some of the, because the plan is to test it. I don't know, Melinda, did I tell you or
yes.
The plan is to drop a generator.
Make sure you can pick it back up.
Which circuits are on the list that month?
We'll let everybody know.
Let's just wait for the clouds to go.
We dropped it and everything was fine.
Can we tell you
what you do that at night when we don't feel
good? Yeah. We'll pick a time.
They're going to oversleep.
You know if it doesn't work.
Please pick up your children. None of the lights are working.
Or I want to go. I guess that was the 30% part.
Everybody's going to the mall to eat.
Okay.
Here's what it looks like. Again,
This again.
Next.
And when are you going to commission this?
This is the battery starting here. No.
When are you testing?
Beginning their BO9 lens of around March 2nd.
Okay.
Nice. They'll begin the whole testing one unit sequence at a time.
You'll be back by then, right?
Dalafofo, I'll be back in the Dalafofo first, and then I got, yeah.
You're going on leave then, right?
Yeah. Remember, Dalafofo only takes care of the the solar PV attendant,
yeah.
And then the Ganyas will take care of the system. Next, just run through a few pictures. That's what it looks like. I think we uploaded in the workbooks. Just came out of the press. Next, Dalafofo. And that's what it looks like there. That's the next.
Looks like the ones we saw in Kauai.
Yep.
Next. It's like a system.
It doesn't look like a Tesla battery, though.
Own containers for batteries. Next.
The air conditioner.
But similar ones.
I think they have them in Kauai.
Yeah. I mean, inside those containers, they're
no battery. So again, that's coming on the line. We'll be testing it. And so... I believe, you know, things will go well, and then we'll see an improvement in the system.
That's exciting.
Then we're going to see, you know, hopefully we get to the point now where, I'm not sure if any of you run your clocks on the electric.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You see
it's running real fast.
You see how fast
I'm early to everything.
That's why they keep the frequency higher, meaning... higher so that if anything happens, it will absorb, you know, it won't drop as far and drop so many customers. So the batteries now will start to, not perfectly yet, we probably need some more in the system, but it will start to make it more smooth and make that timing better. So that's it, Mr. Chair. Really, the others, you know.
Financials?
I just have one question. Your AR has jumped up in the first quarter and you had an answer.
Yes, that was due to the Navy. They changed their payment processing online.
Sounds like GovQuam changing their system.
That too,
right?
Yeah.
And
combination.
But they paid.
They came in like in the first week of January.
Otherwise. So we do have some work to do in the rest of government of Guam, but we're doing it, and we should get results very shortly. Because... I think that's it.
Tomorrow
5:30.
We can just run through the resolutions. We've done all the reporting. And all that good stuff.
And we do have two executive sessions. One for litigation and for personnel. I'll send out some stuff as soon as I get
them.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you. Do I look okay with
this? Oh, boy. Launch.
Looks like a rock star.
I think you should dye your hair back to black.
No, John, you need that because you get up and walk around.
John, I mean, even Steve Jobs uses that.
You need a turtleneck. Yeah, turtleneck now.
Right.
A black turtleneck.
Right.
So
That's the I was trying to think.
Yes, Steve Jobs, black turtleneck.
Yeah, trying to think who else?
You know, Commissioner Santos, I just realized we need to add that to our assets, TIV, the battery. Yeah, that's not costing.
No, but the what's the warranty on it?
20 years.
Oh, you have to add it. Yeah. Is it worth 40 million?
Oh, great! Thank you.
Doesn't want to turn off.